that's been in business for 30 years. That's one of the most successful businesses in this state.
A rally to save South Central Alaska's livestock industry. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, January 14th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz visits homeless camps in Anchorage in an effort to understand and solve the problem.
Our effort is going to be to identify individuals who are on the street or in the camps. There's only 300 or 400 people like that. We can get this done.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Artists make us think and question. They excite and engage. Artists inspire Alaska. The 2016 Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Awards Grant Program is now accepting applications. Individual Artist Awards support Alaska artists in 10 creative disciplines at all career stages. The program is open to Alaska residents only. For details and to apply, visit rasmussen.org/IAA. The deadline is March 1, 2016. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
With a legislative session focused on the budget starting next week, state lawmakers are getting ready to confront some critical decisions. Palmer ranchers are hoping they can make the case for legislators to support the South Central livestock industry. Alaska Public Media's Ellen Lockyer has more.
These days, livestock ranchers in the Matanuska Valley are raising everything from American bison to Tibetan yaks for consumers who want to know where their meat comes from. About 90 ranchers and farmers turned out for a rally on Tuesday in Palmer to raise support for legislative funding for the Mount McKinley Meat and Sausage Packing Plant in Palmer.
That's been in business for 30 years. That's one of the most successful businesses in this state.
That's Palmer's Robert Tom. But Mount McKinley depends on a state appropriation to balance its operating costs. The state paid $155,000 this year to help Mount McKinley balance its budget. The plant is South Central Alaska's only USDA-approved slaughterhouse. It issues the USDA seal necessary for all farmers who want to sell meat commercially. Unless that meat has the USDA seal, it cannot be sold commercially. And the Palmer facility is the only place within 300 miles where Palmer ranchers can get that seal. So livestock owners in the valley fear that if Mount McKinley closes its doors, their fledgling industry will die and take other local businesses with it. No meat sales means fewer animals, less hay, less income for produce growers. Even the Alaska State Fair's 4-H kids could take a hit. Large animal veterinarian Sabrietta Holland brought along a live lamb to illustrate her point. Even veterinarians would get less work.
This particular lamb is the first lamb born in Alaska that's due to a laparoscopic artificial insemination, trying to bring new blood into Alaska. And I'm trying to help the stock in this area build up. I do a ton of artificial insemination for local milk producers, for local beef producers.
Danny Constantine, who works for a USDA agency, says the federal government has a generous loan program for farmers, but without the Valley Meat Packing Plant, those loans won't be approved.
USDA is sitting on a big pile of money to support farmers and ranchers in Alaska who want to expand their herds, who want to start new operations. We're ready. We have the largest amount of loan money that we've ever had, but it's going to be difficult for us to make loans to farmers and ranchers if there's no place for them to process their meat.
At its last session, the legislature approved funding for Mount McKinley through June of this year. Amy Pettit, executive director of the Alaska Farmland Trust and one of the organizers of Tuesday's meeting, says a plan to privatize the meat plant is gaining strength.
And we want to see it privatized. And we recognize that what we really need is the blessing from the legislature to support the governor's budget and 1 year of additional state funding to sausage running through June 30th of 2017, ideally.
The Mount McKinley Meat and Sausage Plant is an asset of the state's Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund, and state appropriations for it come out of interest on the loans, not from the general fund. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
The Anchorage mayor's office is throwing its weight behind initiatives to end homelessness, a problem the administration says has intensified in recent years. As social service providers gather data on homeless individuals, Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports they're pairing new technology with an increased level of political support.
Good morning.
It's just after 8 a.m., and homeless coordinator Nancy Burke stoops toward a snowy tent in the woods by Chester Creek, waking up 58-year-old Dwayne English.
My name's Nancy.
Yeah?
I was wondering if we might visit with you.
What?
Well, we're going out and we're trying to hit many of the camps to see if we can do a survey for how many people we have in the community.
Why don't you come now?
We come in the morning because we want to make sure people are in camp.
English says he's been camping here for about a month and tells Burke if she wants to talk, she should come back later. Burke is persistent, though. She keeps offering coffee and supplies.
Can we leave some socks for you here? Would you care for some?
Burke is going to homeless camps across town, touching base with people about the upcoming Point in Time survey, an annual event where officials and volunteers try to get a census of who is living on the streets. And this morning, several guests are trailing her, including two police officers, a radio reporter, and Mayor Ethan Berkowitz.
This is my first time doing the count.
Berkowitz campaigned on overhauling how the city deals with homelessness, and in the months since, his administration has directed money toward a supporting housing project, reestablished the homeless coordinator position, and built capacity inside City Hall for coordinating with nonprofits. I asked Berkowitz why a mayor needs to spend his morning in the woods doing outreach instead of delegating his staff to do that kind of stuff. And he tells me it helps him shape better policy.
Some administrations ignore problems hoping that they'll go away. That's not been a good solution for homelessness. And our effort is going to be to identify individuals who are on the street or in the camps. There's only 300 or 400 people like that. We can get this done.
That identification step is key in the administration's strategy. Burke is in charge of an aggressive push towards the housing first model, getting folks into homes and rental units as a starting point for plugging them into services, employment, and help. But before all that, Burke says they need solid information on how many people are homeless and what their needs are.
It will give us an idea of where folks are in the community so that we can allocate resources to do outreach and to find people and see what they need to get assistance back into housing.
To get better at that information gathering, officials have switched from paper surveys to an app, which Burke scrolls through on her phone. Actually, is this the general app?
Yeah, this is the app here. So your age, gender, race, homeless information, how long have you been homeless? And then we have some questions about whether people were homeless when they moved to Anchorage or if they moved to Anchorage and then became homeless.
Individuals have to sign off, literally put their signature in a box on the smartphone screen before the GIS mapping coordinates are transferred to the Homeless Information Management System. The administration's model depends not just on identifying and mapping people, but knowing each person's name and needs. Terry Chubin supervises a transitional housing program within RuralCap. She's done outreach work for years and says getting people plugged into resources comes from building relationships.
And so we just go and we just introduce ourselves. And sometimes it takes a few times going back and giving out a lot of socks, bus passes, McDonald's gift cards, or whatever we have. And then just building that trust and that rapport with the person. Because if you just go in and go here you go and leave, you're not doing anything.
The Point in Time survey is Wednesday, January 27th. Burke says information for volunteers is at the website for the Anchorage Coalition for Ending Homelessness, or she adds, interested residents can contact the mayor's office. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an environmental group says the Tongass Forest Plan doesn't do enough to combat climate change.
When a tree does fall in a forest, and if it's done by logging, you're going to lose about 80% of that stored carbon.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaskan lives are salmon lives. Every Alaskan is connected to salmon, whether living in downtown Anchorage or on the Yukon River. So this winter, join the Salmon Project as they journey across the state. Join the journey at salmonlife.org. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
A statewide effort to make it easier for people to vote is culminating this week. Today, petitioners submitted tens of thousands of required signatures to the Division of Elections to earn the PFD Voter Registration Initiative a spot on the ballot this fall. KCAW's Brielle Schaefer has the story.
The campaign began late last year in Anchorage and snowballed to other communities, including Sitka, Ketchikan, Kotzebue, Bethel, and Fairbanks. Overall, the PFD Voter Ballot Initiative, a proposal that automatically registers people to vote at the same time they apply for their yearly payouts, has gained support from some 42,000 Alaskans. That's nearly double the number it needed to make it on a ballot in case some signatures were invalid. Here's John Henry Heckendorn, the Anchorage-based campaign manager for the PFD Voter Initiative.
We're confident that by overshooting the required mark by so much, we're going to make it onto the ballot.
After the Division of Elections combs through all the signatures, the proposal will likely show up in either August's primary or November's general election. Then it will be up to voters. Heckendorn says the Common Sense Initiative was born out of a working group on elections reform organized by Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott, and it gained support across party lines. The PFD Voter Ballot Initiative is endorsed by a broad spectrum of agencies, including the NAACP, the League of Women Voters, and the Alaska Federation of Natives. The majority of the campaign's funding has come from ANCSA Regional Association, Alaska Conservation Voters, and the ACLU of Alaska. Heckendorn says the group's main arguments for merging voter registration with PFD applications is to make it easier for people to vote and to make state government more efficient by reducing redundancies and paperwork.
This initiative is a move towards using the resources that we've already invested in to do double and even triple duty. Alaska has one of the lower rates of accurate voter registration in the U.S. This initiative would make Alaska's voting system the most accurate voting system of any state in U.S. history. That's huge.
The working group, which included Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins, modeled their initiative after Oregon's motor voter law, which automatically registers people to vote when they renew or apply for a driver's license or state ID at the DMV. Zoe Kitchell, Sitka's field organizer for the campaign, says Christ Tompkins was instrumental in garnering support.
He himself was out there at the Star Wars premiere collecting signatures and running around frantically helping the effort for the last 2 weeks of December.
There is a shift already happening on the state level in terms of digital voter registration. The Division of Elections recently launched an online form, and since November, according to Lieutenant Governor Mallott, some 600 people have signed up to vote. That's an improvement, Kitchell says, but still not enough.
There's still that limiting factor that you're really excited to vote, you go to register online 25 days before the election, and that's still not soon enough, even though it's online. And so by automatically registering people, they don't have to worry about that 30-day restriction, and it just takes another step out of the way.
Last year, more than 500,000 Alaskans received PFD checks. Kitchell says if this ballot initiative passes, some 70,000 more people could simultaneously be registered to vote.
We're trying to change voting from an opt-in system to an opt-out system.
Some opponents of the initiative are fearful of giving too much personal information to the government. Were it to pass, Kitchell says, the ballot initiative would not collect any more information than the PFD application. The initiative also includes an opt-out clause. Within a month of applying for the PFD, residents will receive a postcard in the mail that gives them the option of deregistering to vote. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Brielle Schaefer.
A federal proposal to make Southeast Alaska's logging industry sustainable while preserving old growth in the Tongass National Forest does too little, too slowly, according to one conservation group. The Oregon-based Geos Institute says the Tongass National Forest draft plan is out of step with a global agreement to reduce climate change. KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins explains.
President Obama visited Alaska back in September to see the effects of climate change firsthand.
So this whole valley would have been filled with a glacier.
Yeah.
Then a few months later, the U.S. joined about 195 nations in signing the Paris Climate Change Agreement. The president has made reducing carbon emissions a talking point during his time in office.
But his administration puts forward a forest plan that isn't ambitious enough.
That's Dominique Della Sala, a scientist at the Geos Institute. What he's referring to is the draft timber plan for the Tongass, which is open for public comment until February. In a nutshell, the federal plan outlines dramatically reducing old-growth logging while ensuring a sustainable supply of young-growth trees. The problem, De La Sala says, is the plan isn't as aggressive as it could be.
Those acres of trees being cut down over time would be equivalent to the emissions of 4 million additional cars on Alaska roads every year.
For over 100 years. The Geos Institute has been crunching their numbers with Forest Service data. De La Sala believes the transition from old to young growth logging could be done in 5 years rather than 16. He says trees soak up carbon dioxide from the atmosphere like a sponge, essentially a big stick of carbon.
Now, unfortunately, when a tree does fall in a forest, and if it's done by logging, you're going to lose about 80% of that stored carbon.
And eventually, when it decomposes, it goes up into the atmosphere as greenhouse gas. And with old-growth trees, De La Sala says you get more carbon. With the Paris Climate Change Agreement, leaders came up with guidelines to slow global warming. They pledged to protect forests like the Tongass.
So it's absolutely critical to everyone's future that we keep those temperatures below that 4-degree Fahrenheit tipping point that most scientists believe all hell will break loose in terms of climate change.
You know, I don't really give a damn about the Paris, what they did over there with climate change.
Owen Graham is the executive director of the Alaska Forest Association, a timber industry group. He thinks the Tongass draft plan already transitions to young growth trees too soon. Any sooner could be devastating.
That'll put the local sawmills out of business, and it seems kind of pointless. It's hardly a transition. It's just cutting the trees early and exporting them.
He says most mills in the area can't process the less valuable product, so the trees would likely be shipped overseas or down south. The loss of hundreds of regional jobs.
The industry that we've had in southeast Alaska has never been a big industry, despite what you hear, you know, from some of the environmental groups. And we've never had a significant impact on anything, let alone global warming.
Dominique De La Sala says the goal of his report isn't to reduce jobs. It's to find alternatives.
I think we need to demonstrate that with a pilot study that these young trees can be processed locally, they can generate jobs, and they can have value to them.
Forest Service reps said they need more time to review De La Sala's report before commenting. But De La Sala says the clock is ticking as the president is wrapping up his term.
This is not a legacy gift to Alaskans when we still have this much old growth on the table, on the chopping block for the president's exit strategy.
How much old growth is on the table? According to the plan, more than 43,000 acres by about the year 2117. That sounds like a lot, but it's about a quarter of a percentage point of the entire Tongass. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence,
and by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Happy New Year. Start the year off right by filing your 2016 PFD application. Don't forget to sign your application electronically or by printing a signature page. The deadline to apply is Thursday, March 31st, 2016. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
The Alaska Marine Highway System released its summer 2016 ferry schedule this week, and as expected, it includes trimmed-down service. Spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says the main changes customers will notice is the reduced fleet size, which he says is in response to state budget cuts.
One of the main ferries that will not be operating is the Taku, which was in layup last summer as well, and then as well as the Malaspina. The Malaspina will be in an overhaul period for the majority of the summer.
One change from the draft summer schedule is the addition of the Fast Ferry Fairweather, which will operate 4 days a week, serving Juneau, Haines, Skagway, and Sitka. Woodrow says that change was in response to public comment, particularly from Sitka residents.
Sitka had probably the most drastic reduction in service in the draft schedule, and that was because of the elimination of the fast ferries from operating this upcoming summer. By adding in the fast ferry, changing the way that the LeConte is running, Sitka will get improved ferry service than what it had been previously proposed.
One caveat, though, Woodrow says this summer's ferry schedule is based on funding levels in Governor Bill Walker's spending plan released last month. The legislature meets soon and could change those amounts. With a vote of 5-2, Sitka joins Petersburg in penning a letter to the State Department of Law requesting the setback for marijuana businesses be reduced from 500 feet to 200 at minimum. But there was disagreement on the Assembly about whether the department, which is reviewing the regs, would even listen, and if they did, whether 200 feet was too close for comfort. KCAW's Emily Kwong has more.
Now, imagine you've been given the keys to your very own marijuana business. But you can't build it within 500 feet of the following.
Schools, recreation or youth centers, any buildings where religious services are currently conducted or correctional facilities.
That's Levi Albertson, chair of the Marijuana Advisory Committee. Given that 500-foot setback, where would you build? Where can you build? Definitely not downtown. And Albertson said this disappoints some members of the committee.
We'd like to see some downtown marijuana-related trade for the tourists. This eliminates quite a bit of that possibility.
By comparison, the setback for liquor establishments is 200 feet. Albertson said that the state may well ignore Sitka's request, but urged the Assembly to try. Lindsay Evans, who is the newest member of the committee, said that any prospective business owners would have to set up shop further down Sitka's 14 miles of road.
The only areas that I was really able to see retail marijuana going to is the industrial areas, Granite Creek, the place off the road by the old pulp mill, Paxton.
And retail operations are not even allowed at the Gary Paxton Industrial Park. Bob Petruski, who serves on the Marijuana Advisory Committee, felt that having that buffer zone may be preferable to Sitkins and spoke against sending the letter.
I've heard a lot of talk of people that would be against having marijuana dispensaries downtown.
Petruski said he was also persuaded by the opinion of Aaron Bean, who wants to start a business in Sitka and kept a close ear on the state's regulatory meetings last fall.
He was not in favor of this letter being sent. His feeling was that during those meetings where the regs were decided upon, the marijuana industry was really granted a lot of concessions. And this was one of those things that the other side really held very, very tightly. So when probably the number one guy in favor of starting a business here in Sitka speaks against this, that meant a lot to me. You know, and there's always that opportunity to bring those tourists in and put them on a bus, take them out to where it is they can buy and smoke.
Assemblymember Stephen Eisenbeiss, who also serves on the committee, interpreted that 200-foot setback differently, saying it would give Sitka greater wiggle room. City Attorney Robin Kochak backed that point.
Really, the bottom line on this ordinance was local control, especially the island communities, that they will be able to, according to their own ideals and their own zoning and regulations and so forth, be able to be flexible.
That includes, Kochak added, creating perimeters over 500 feet if necessary. In the end, the Sitka Assembly passed the resolution 5-2, with Bob Petruski and Ben Maiasato voting against it. The city plans to move pretty quickly on this, since the State Department of Law will conclude their review of the regulations soon. Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott has until January 24th to sign them. The Marijuana Control Board will then begin accepting applications for marijuana business licenses on February 24th. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
A proposal laying the groundwork for a pink salmon commercial fishery near the mouth of the Yukon is on the agenda of this week's Board of Fisheries meeting in Fairbanks. As KIYU's Tim Bodoni reports, the proposal would formalize a fishery that has been taking shape by accident over the past few years, but there are concerns about how it would affect the struggling Yukon king salmon population.
The proposal was submitted by Quipuc Fisheries, the major fish buyer on the lower Yukon. It would allow the Department of Fish and Game to open commercial fishing with 4-inch mesh nets to target pink salmon at a time when fishermen are using other gear types to harvest the tail end of the summer chum run. Quipuc Fisheries General Manager Jack Scholtai says that, until fairly recently, pink salmon have been largely a disposable fish on the Yukon.
Historically, there's never been a market for pinks on the lower Yukon or anywhere on the Yukon that I'm aware of. So what fishermen have been doing is just throwing them away.
Seeing the fish go to waste, Quipuc started buying pinks in 2008, paying only a few cents per pound. Now Quipuc is aiming to pay fishermen 20 to 25 cents per pound for Yukon pinks, which Schultheis says can command a higher price in the marketplace than a typical Alaska hatchery-raised pink. Quipuc is already selling substantial quantities of pink salmon, which are harvested incidentally in the summer chum salmon commercial openings in June and July. 20,000 pounds of pink salmon came out of the lower Yukon in 2014, a large portion of which went to Europe as fillets. Fish and Game does not have escapement goals for Yukon pink salmon or a detailed stock assessment, but a sonar at the Anvik River estimated about 1 million pinks going past it in 2014. About 60,000 pinks went up the Andreevsky River near St. Mary's that year as well. Yukon pink runs in odd-numbered years are much smaller. Fish and Game is neutral on the proposal to establish a directed pink salmon fishery. Fish and Game Yukon summer season manager Stephanie Schmidt says the department is taking a wait-and-see approach, but does not think that pink salmon fishing in the mid-summer will harm the depleted stocks of Yukon king salmon very much.
Just a little bit of overlap with the king salmon run towards the tail end, but honestly, we currently execute a summer chum commercial fishery on the tail end of king salmon run while there's still summer chum available, and so I would see no problem with us prosecuting a pink salmon commercial fishery as the pink salmon are coming in, and it's the king salmon run is wrapping up, as long as we're meeting escapement goals for king salmon.
Support for the pink salmon proposal among the Fish and Game Advisory Committees is split along regional lines, with lower river committees in support and opposition coming from upriver committees who express concern that a pink fishery will result in more bycatch of king salmon. The Board of Fish is scheduled to begin its deliberation on Yukon River salmon proposals Wednesday afternoon, with voting to occur on Friday. Reporting in Galena, this is Tim Bedoni.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer in Palmer, Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Brielle Schaefer and Emily Kwong in Sitka, Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Layla Carey in Ketchikan, and Tim Bedoni in Galena. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great evening.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
And by
the 2016 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. Alaska Pacific University delivers an affordable education and life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. Graduate with work-ready experience in the career field of your choice. Apply now for fall 2016 and find out more about APU's Promise Tuition Grant and other scholarships at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
At the Salmon Project, they know that Alaskan lives are salmon lives. Join them this winter as they journey across the state and hear the stories of Alaskans whose lives are amazingly similar to you live 2,000 miles away. Learn more at salmonlife.org. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.